The nation's opioid addiction epidemic is just the sort of phenomenon the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Service Administration was designed to take on. SAMHSA, part of Health and Human Services, is making a major push to improve its data analytics capabilities. I spoke about the scope of data-related activity with SAMHSA's Chief Information Officer, Don Cox.
The opioid epidemic, which has become one of the focuses of SAMHSA. Prior to that, it might have been heroin, it might have been some other illegal drug or narcotic that was on the street.
And so that's affected a lot of the data gathering, I guess, that the agency would do, because you've got new topics all the time.
Correct. So within the last 2 or 3 years, we started talking about legalizing marijuana. And so there was a focus on what are the impacts of marijuana to the citizens, to the state. And then, yes, now the opioid epidemic has caused us to go in a different direction.
And let's just get a little profile of SAMHSA itself. How many people are there and what kinds of activities happen there to effectuate the battle against this substance abuse and mental health issue?
So the federal population of employees for SAMHSA is about 600, billions of dollars in budget, and breaking down those 600 individuals, there are groups that are listed on the website. I'm going to use the acronyms for them. CSAT, which is Substance Abuse, Center for Substance Abuse and Treatment, CSAP, which is Center for Substance Abuse and Prevention. There's also an entity we refer to as CBISC, which is our quantitative analytics group that goes out and does the surveys that we'll talk about, as well as a host of other entities that are combined supporting the mission of bringing awareness and bringing treatment and prevention to the substance abuse and mental health issues in the U.S.
Okay, and I want to get to those quantitative surveys because that's the basis of a lot of the data that you analyze. But before we do that, just give us a brief overview of the underlying systems that you operate there.
Sure. So when we talk about systems, everything we do here is data, is related to data. To that end, right, the data is the new gold. So our systems are, to that end, and this might sound cliche, but they're people, their processes, and their technology, right? So it's the people that we employ to go out and collect the data from the individuals in the general population. It's the data that we buy and or collect from providers of data. So that may be a pharmacy, that may be something related to doctors. The processes are how we make sure that the data is accurate, much like the Bureau of Labor Statistics, which puts out numbers related to jobs every year and has a very rigorous and congressionally mandated way that the data has to be handled. SAMHSA also has a group that does that, where they make sure that the data is tightly controlled and everybody that utilizes or has access to the data has been cleared and trained so that it can be a source of reliable and consistent information for studies and for research. The technology on the back end is your visualization tools, it's your business intelligence types tools, things that allow you to look at data, look for the signal in the noise, or look for inverse references or inferences from the data, try to identify anomalies or outliers, or try to determine patterns or trends.
Talk more about the survey and the types of data that those get.
So the surveys, in some cases, are it's personal health information. So we might be out asking, has anybody in the family used opioids? How long have they been using opioids? What do they use the opioids for? They would ask the obvious name, age, gender, and some other factors. Some of the data sets that we get into, one of them is called NISDA, which is the National Survey on Drug Use and Health. Its primary source of information is on the prevalence patterns and consequences of alcohol, tobacco, and illegal drug use and abuse and mental illness disorders, right? And this one focuses on civilians that are non-institutionalized and age 12 and older. So kind of an interesting note there about, you know, we're going down to people that are 12 years of age and collecting this information.
And so it sounds like if you add all this data up over the years, you've got a fairly large database going.
Correct. Yeah, you could see some pretty interesting trends across the United States.
And how do you keep the data comparable from year to year or even decade to decade?
So define comparable.
Well, I mean, do the survey questions change, for example, and how do you make sure that you can compare apples to apples from 1 year and going back 10 years or 20 years?
Right. So good question. When the surveys are created, and we have partnerships here, this is a combination of the federal subject matter experts, as well as contractors who receive contracts, and those contractors will have psychiatrists, psychologists, mental health, counselors. And so to create the questions, we're always looking at what was asked in the past, what do we need to know in the future in order to be helpful to the public. So to that end, right, there's always that balance between what questions can be asked to ensure that we're understanding the trends and the patterns and what's going to be beneficial to the citizens of the United States and to treatment facilities.
We're speaking with Don Cox, CIO of the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Service Administration. That's part of Health and Human Services. Let's talk about the data itself, because if you have years and years of survey data, that's structured data, and you know the format and you know the way it comes in. Safe to say all of the data is structured in a similar fashion, or do you also deal with other structured data or unstructured data?
Yeah, so to that end, let's talk maybe 10 years ago. Everything was structured data. We weren't talking much about unstructured or semi-structured data. Today, SAMHSA is actually looking at a wide range of data. So it is structured, and that's the information we get from surveys. But we're also looking at data that could be unstructured, whether it be some of the social media venues that are out there, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, other specialty sites that might exist. What information is out there that we can glean and maybe commingle with some structured data to make some inferences? And then your semi-structured would be much like email. There's a little bit of structure to it, name, date, to, from blocks, but yet the content within the emails themselves isn't necessarily structured. Now, not to say that we're collecting email information. That was just an example of potentially a data set that could exist out there that would be hybrid or semi-structured.
But there are data sets out there that relate to the level and use and patterns of substances and mental health issues that you use besides the survey data that the agency generates on its own.
Correct. So there's grants that are given. This is SAMHSA is one of the its largest missions is to provide billions of dollars of grants out to state and local tribal entities in order to help them deal with the substance abuse and mental health issues that are going on in their area. And those grantees themselves have a requirement to collect information about the individuals that are being provided treatment. And then that information is then provided back to SAMHSA to include in its evaluations and its trending. To that end, SAMHSA and the team of researchers that deal with data are always looking for other sources that they can buy, purchase. It may be from a pharmaceutical company, where how many types of drugs and variations of drugs are being sold on the street. It might be from insurance companies, what types of treatments are people seeking and in what regions. So there's a lot that can be asked of data once you have it, and then to know to ask for the right data.
And once the data is all in the agency, how is it that it relates then to the analysis that's done for different programs? That is to say, do you have regular programs that require analyzing the data to put out reports? And do you also have ad hoc requirements depending on someone's hunch about something?
So there's always the possibility of a government entity or Congress or the White House or some group within HHS saying we're seeing this activity. Could be from CDC, could be from, that's the Center for Disease Control, right? Could be from Center for Mental, for CMS. And so maybe a question is asked by them, and who has the best data set, or FDA would be another one. And then utilizing our data sets, we could team with these organizations, and we can say, here's what we see or what we know about an activity that's relevant to your drug or to your reimbursement with Medicare, Medicaid, or to a Center for Disease Control. and from that make some inferences, or maybe commingle some of their data sets to see what can bubble up. Just a real good example of that might be the recent epidemics or outbreaks of deaths related to opioids, and then mixing that with another drug, kind of looking at that area and how will we get help there.
Plus, you also have regular reports that you have to run as part of the ongoing job of the agency?
Correct. So within the website, there's a samhsa.gov/data. And under there, it lists a number of the surveys on drug use and health summary of national findings. There's a psychological distress and mortality among adults in the U.S., as well as some other ones. Underage binge alcohol use varies within and across the U.S., so there's a number of different studies that ongo related to mental health, alcohol, tobacco, and drug use.
But it's safe to say the main output of the agency is these reports on trends in the particular area that we're dealing with.
Yeah, that is a very important aspect of our mission, also to bubble up treatment locators. So currently there are some treatment drugs that are available to help with the opioid epidemic. And so on the website for SAMHSA.gov, you can go and identify the treatment locations for that particular drug that's being prescribed for individuals. There might be also something on there for bullying. There might be something on there for alcohol treatment, as well as mental health.
Let's talk about the tools that you use for data analysis. That's an area of technological ferment, if there ever was one. How would you characterize the tool sets that you use now? No need to be vendor specific, but right. How do you approach the data?
Very good. Very good question. So back to what I said earlier, right? There's people, process, and technology. That's a tool. Do we have the right people that understand the data and that can then commingle the data and use the applications that are necessary to visualize or make actionable the information? Then there's the process, right? So the process has to, part of this is from concept, what do we want to learn? What do we want to know? And then how are we collecting it to make sure that it's evidentiary or secured in a way, all the way to the final output. So the other tools, right, there's surveys that we go out and talk to the individuals on the street, talk to individuals in the facilities where treatment's occurring, talk to just a whole host of people. The research, which is looking at what is done in the universities or what is done in the research facilities. We use a combination of proprietary software applications that are entities are specifically making to help SAMHSA because they know our mission, they know what we need, there's a lot of experience there. There are some open source tools that we benefit from as well that people are creating and putting out there, as well as the common off-the-shelf and when you talk about GOTS products, which are government off-the-shelf. These are things that the government has paid to have customized and built and we use. From that, there's the taking the data itself and visualizing it, creating entity resolutions, some mapping, and then some modeling of the data.
Can you give us a rough idea of how big all of the data stores are? Are you into terabytes, petabytes, or even larger?
Larger. So if you put them all together, you're probably talking zettabytes.
Wow. And is this all stored locally, or are you into the whole cloud era also?
Very interesting question from the standpoint of myself, having been to a number of other agencies, probably about six or seven in total. SAMHSA itself, I'd say, is 95% cloud. We have one, and then to that end, the 5% that we have is in a co-location data center. So it meets the definition of cloud first or co-location. And to that end, right, SAMHSA doesn't own any equipment. We the one co-location facility is because there's a congressionally legislated language that says you have to be able to see, touch the equipment that the data resides on.
So you can get there to it if you have to. And what about the applications? Do they also run in the cloud too, so that you're basically freed from local infrastructure and application development and, well, not so much development, but maintenance?
Yes, we're free from all of that. There's definitely a cost savings when you talk about having to manage and patch and all of that. Plus, it avails the researchers of new tools that exist in these cloud services that it would take, you know, look at the government acquisition process. Sometimes it's a month, sometimes it's 6 months before you can actually obtain a tool. If it's in the cloud and it's already either been FedRAMP certified or certified by some other group, then we can benefit from that tool existing, push a button, and we're utilizing it for maybe a month, 6 months, push a button, and it gets turned off, and we don't need to use it anymore. So very happy to be part of that.
Let's talk about the analytic process for a moment, because you have people asking questions, and you have mission people, and you have data experts. It sounds like you really need to take a team approach to knowing, first of all, what questions that you want from the data, and then how to get those questions answered from what you have on hand.
Yes. The caveat to that is also to expect the unexpected and then be able to know that, okay, I got an answer from the data. I thought I asked 1, 2, and 3, but didn't get the result I thought I was going to get. So now, you know, take a deeper dive into why. It's working with data as I have over the past probably, you know, 10 years now. There's your, I guess, methodical set ways of asking questions and getting answers. And then you've come to realize there's an inverse to the answer you expect. And why does that inverse matter? Because it just paints a whole nother picture of a potential thought that you have. But it's really the individuals themselves and the varying thought processes on how to ask questions of the data in order to make, I guess, these treatments or the programs or provide information up back to the public. A lot of this stems from either Congress asking a question or the White House asking a question, some of the staff members seeing some tendencies, some trends in the public and saying, we think this would be good information for the general public to know what's going on in their area and why, so they can make informed decisions. Some others might be special interest groups that are asking questions of the data. And so all of those things are kind of the basis by which the groups of feds and contractors that support us, we can sit down and come up with some very good questions of the data and to make statements about why things are happening.
We're speaking with Don Cox. He's the CIO of the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Service Administration. And so when you get to querying the data, then it sounds like there must be, in this modern age, a variety of techniques. I mean, there's classic report writing questions that you would use against a standard relational database. But then there's free-flowing and less structured questions you have to ask. And so how does that all work, and how do you maintain the talent to be able to do both?
Good question, too. So the talent comes from the individuals that are here. I mean, the desire to be part of helping out with substance abuse and mental health issues. When you talk to the employees that are here, I found everybody here positive. Everybody understands the mission. Some people have themselves openly communicated to their employer and to their coworkers that they're recovering in a recovering program, or we're in a recovering program, whether it be drugs or alcohol or what have you. So kind of adds a different dimension to the work that's being done here. And then from that perspective, right, going out to the contracting companies and finding out from them who's the best and the brightest, and working with the universities themselves and getting some knowledge or information from those groups on how to undertake a specific task.
Right, so contractors and staff, it's a combination, but it seems like there's also a need for skill refresh from time to time as these new data types and query types have really proliferated.
Always a need to attend training, to go to conferences, to come across a new data set and ask an individual, I need you to go do research on this particular data or this tool and see how the tool would help us. I had a very good recent example. An individual was trained and has been working on a specific tool for years and years and years now, and that's kind of the only tool that they thought could do the mission. So part of my role as the CIO is to go out and visit with companies and understand new tools and new capabilities, and then determine whether or not it's a viable alternative to what we're doing today. And when I brought this tool back in and asked my colleagues at work with me to look at it, I've never seen a brighter glow on somebody's face. They're like, this is the new tool. This is what we need to look at. You know, caveat that with, I get the conversation from my boss about, you know, the shiny object always isn't the best. So let's take a methodical approach to bringing the tool in and doing the analysis of alternatives. And, you know, does it meet one need, six needs, and how do we go forward?
Any good stories about some data revelations that might have come up that were unexpected, or some really good insights that you were after that you were able to get?
Yeah, actually, from going to the Stamps of website, I brought up from the use of the data two press releases that were out there. One was from December of 2015, where a report was released showing that hospital-acquired conditions had declined 17% over a four-year period, right? And this was building on a previous report. The same report that was done a year later shows that hospital-acquired conditions have dropped actually 21% over the last 5 years. That resulted in $28 billion in savings, right, since 2010. So not something that most people would think SAMHSA does, but it's definitely in the wheelhouse. And as a result of the data, we're showing where there is a large cost savings, and where whatever is being publicized and then from that passed down to the state, local government agencies or federal institutions has having an impact on hospital conditions.
So these are things that may not have even been thought of as necessarily SAMHSA questions, but nevertheless, because of the analysis you're capable of and the data that's in there, you could come up with an answer to a very important public health question.
That's a true statement. Yeah, and along with that, I just popped into my head. So part of Health and Human Services, SAMHSA, is the Public Health Services Corps. So these are individuals that have volunteered to be in a military-like organization. And they go out to the different areas where treatment or services or may be needed, right? So they may work on the Indian Health on the reservations, or they may work in the hospitals with mental health or substance abuse. And they're another good resource of information or knowledge about what's going on. Some of them even work overseas, some of the epidemics that are going on over there.
And you have five major data sets. Briefly describe those for us.
Yes. So there's population data, which I mentioned earlier, which is the NISDA data. That's a survey on drug use and health. There's a client-level data set called TEDS, which is a treatment episode data sets and contains demographic characteristics and substance abuse problems. You have substance abuse facilities data, which is where are these facilities where you can receive treatment, mental health facility data. You have emergency department data, which is a drug abuse warning network. It's a public health surveillance system and monitors drug-related hospital emergency visits so that we can alert. And the last one is the CBISC report, which is the Center for Behavioral Statistics and Quality, and it's the government's lead agency for behavioral statistics as designed by the Office of Management and Budget, and that's the one earlier, or that's the one that I mentioned, has a similar mission to Bureau of Labor Statistics.
Don Cox is Chief Information Officer at the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Service Administration. We'll post the full interview at federalnewsradio.com.